council meeting for Tuesday, December the 11th, 2018. It's 9 a.m. It's called to order. I would like to welcome everyone here today. We are privileged today to be able to provide Years of Service Awards to our municipal employees, and that is the first item we will deal with this morning. Our CAO, Chris McNeil, is away on municipal business today. And I would ask those that are receiving awards today, if you would all remain until the end of the presentations of awards, we would like to have a group photo. The region of Queens Municipality is made up of many departments located in different areas and employs approximately 100 staff. Events like this are a nice opportunity for us to get together as a group and recognize those who are responsible for many of the activities of the municipality. Among the operations of the Region of Queens are the Administrative Building, Hillsview Acres Home for Special Care, the Works Department, Grounds Crew, Landfill, Materials Recovery Facility, and Queens Place Amira Center. Today we are recognizing 21 Region of Queens staff representing a cumulative total of 240 years of employment and public service. Those here today have reached a milestone in their employment, ranging from 5 years to 40 years of service. So at this point, I would like to break the groups down into different years of service. We'll do the five-year awards first. I would ask those that I state the names would please come forward, and then we'll present the awards. They are being awarded to Steve Burns, Manager of Events, Promotions and Sponsorships, Administration Building. Alex Camo, Facility Attendant, Queens Place Amira Center. Paul Daugherty, Facility Attendant, Queens Place Amira Center. Amy Pack, Residential Care Assistant, Hillsview Acres. Dave Kelly, Operations Manager, Queens Place Amira Center. Richard Lane, Development Officer, Economic Development. Lloyd Wolf, Facility Attendant, Queens Place Amira Center. And I'd ask if you would come forward. Start off with Steve Burns this morning. Congratulations, morning, Steve.
Thanks very much. Yeah.
Congratulations, Lloyd. And we'll move on now to the camp. So if you'd like to stand aside just for a minute, we'll proceed through.
Stay right in front of me. Yeah. It's up to you, Alex.
10-year awards. John Barry, Sorter, MRF Facility. Bill Layton, Building Fire Official, Administration Building. Frank Oikel, Sorter, MRF Facility. Megan Roberts, Director of Recreation and Community and Healthy Communities, Queens Place Amira Center. Neil Roy, Sorter, MRF Facility. Janie Ryan, Manager of Hillsview Acres. And I would ask those that are present today to come forward. And Colin Van Busker.
You left me off the list.
Congratulations, Bill. For the 15-year awards, Shelley Connolly, Deputy Clerk, Administration Building. Wayne Henley, Senior Tradesperson, Mechanic, Works Department. Dwayne Hirschman, Tradesperson Helper, Water Works Department. And Audrey Womble, Activity Director, Hillsview Acres. I would ask those present today. Congratulations, Wayne. Thank you.
Sure.
Someone had written a very small name on there. Congratulations, Kelly. And for 25-year award, we have Tim Thorburn, heavy equipment operator, works department, who is absent today. For a 40-year award, we have Sherman Roberts, senior tradesperson, water works department. And is Sherman here today? So those are the awards, and certainly we appreciate all that the employees have put forward over their working years, and will continue for many. On behalf of council and the residents of the community, I thank you for your hard work. It is a pleasure to work with all of you. The knowledge, experience, and strong commitment you have to serving the public, along with the pride you show in representing the region of Queens Municipality, is evident and appreciated. Thank you very much. Now, if you'd like to gather in front, we'll do a group photo, and have your book will snap the picture.
Probably the taller
folks
in the back.
Oh, did you do our doors coming
in front?
Yeah. What? Did your picture inside?
Well, on open.
Lots of room.
Yeah, for everybody.
Sorry, I'm trying not to move out your way. We can go two rows. We can go two rows because it's just too wide.
Shelly, she bought her own. She made sure she had the biggest purse.
Moving on with our agenda today, we have 2.0, changes, approval of agenda. I have three changes of additions to add today to the agenda. They all fall under 15.0 in-camera items. We will add 15.2 contract negotiations. That is 15.2 contract negotiations. We will add under 15.3 legal advice. Addition of 15.3 legal advice. And we will add 15.4 sale of municipal property. That is 15.4 sale of municipal property. Those are three additions to the agenda today. Are there any other additions to the agenda today? Hearing none, a motion to approve the agenda as amended would be in order. Moved by Councilor Fisk, seconded by Councilor Muse. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. We are now to 3.0 presentations, and under 3.1 we have a presentation by Acting Staff Sergeant Corporal John Harris. And if you would like to come to the front presentation desk, Corporal Harris. Corporal Harris is going to update us on the RCMP report today.
Good morning.
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 Get right to it. I guess I can start the morning off with some good news. In what would be probably the fastest staffing action I've ever seen in the RCMP, they have named a new staff sergeant for the detachment here. Sergeant Dan Archibald has been promoted to the rank of staff sergeant. He's going to be coming out of Saskatchewan, and he will arrive as soon as he sells his house. And in conversation with him, he's quite motivated to do so. So hopefully that'll happen soon. Other staffing things, we are currently sitting at 10 members. I've been working closely with our health services department to try and make sure that the members that we have that are off are receiving as much support as they have available to them to see if we can get them in and back to work as quick as possible.
Your worship,
yes.
Am I able to ask a question?
Councilor McLeod, certainly.
How many men are off on your staff?
We
are off on stress leave?
Three.
Three.
Yeah.
Can you tell us which ones are?
I certainly can, yeah. It's Constable Doug Brannan, Constable Adam Worth, and Constable Rick Ellens. Okay. So I believe the last time we were here would have been June with Staff Smith?
Probably closer.
July.
July. Okay. I did a breakdown of our distribution of occurrences over the last 4 months just to see if the hours of work that we were patrolling were appropriate. Looking at the distribution of times and days, the hours that we're working, the hours that we're on call are still appropriate, so we won't be changing those at all. The statistics are pretty self-explanatory. We haven't seen any sharp rises in any particular crimes, so that's a good thing. We don't want to see any sharp spikes in any particular area. Particular break and enters is what we pay a lot of attention to, and we haven't seen a sharp rise. We did have one period where we had a string of them, but those are still under investigation with ourselves and IDENT services. If there's any questions about the current statistics at all.
Any questions of counselors on the occurrences? Councilor Schroeder?
You had mentioned there was a string of break-ins. Are you referring to the River Road and
yes.
Installs?
So yeah.
No ending to that yet?
Not yet. It's still under investigation. We're just working with our IDENT services, and we have a criminal kind of analysis section that will look for trends among, like all over Southwest Nova, to see if that matches up with a similar MO or anything like that. So.
Any idea of the?
Not yet, no.
Any other counselors?
Our community policing report has, if maybe we're unaware, but Constable Ron Duffney has been moved into the community policing officer role as of September, and he's been already doing numerous presentations in the schools, working with litter abatement groups, setting up, I don't know the details of it yet, but he's started a youth group, I believe, in the Caledonia area as well. He's been participating in interagency school advisory council and school services meetings, defensive driving presentations to youth. He's been, he did red search duty with a number of members, and I'll talk about those after. He's been doing a lot of presentations, actually, with changes to the cannabis laws to youth and to adults as well. And participated in a Mi'kmaq awareness workshop at North Queens School. So that's been going really well. He's trying to fill up his schedule with as many meetings and presentations as he possibly can. He's also still acting in a detachment role as the acting corporal. So he's been a great help to me while I'm in the acting staff's role. The senior safety report, Carol has been doing a lot of work. I can go through that report, but I wouldn't be able to give any further details on what's in the report. Let me go through that? Okay. So there's been, she's been receiving a lot of referrals lately and working closely with adult protection and health services as well. Just trying to make sure that we're getting the best care that we can for seniors that are in need. She works closely with us as well. We do a lot of referrals to her with some of our higher risk clients that are, you know, having issues due to isolation health issues, building safety plans, and services of that nature. And she's reporting in October that she has 9 active clients. Active clients receiving services, 16. New referrals, she had 2 in that month. 10 home visits, 1 file that was closed, not entirely sure why. And the other are just kilometric rates for helping people get to appointments and various other services.
Can I just ask a question about that one? Yeah, can you just expand? I don't understand. There's the number of active clients are 9, and of those, 16 are receiving client services?
As soon as I read it, I noticed that as
well.
Oh,
right. Yeah. What's that? What does that mean?
That is a good question. If you'd like, I can get in touch with Ms. Hepwell and get that answer to your office.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Okay. So in the last period, obviously we've had 2 retirements. Staff Sergeant Smith retired after 36 years of service and was replaced by Staff Sergeant Cliff McKay, who for personal reasons ended up having to retire. And so I am currently the acting district commander. I've got in here that the promotional competition for Staff Sergeant position was advertised and closed on the 21st of November. That was true at the time of the report, and I found out 2 days later that they had made a selection and we will be receiving our new staff sergeant soon. He's not at retirement age, so we're going to be okay for a few years there, and he's pretty motivated to come and I believe live in the area, so that's good. Some of the files of interest that we did have the attempted murder file. It's an ongoing investigation, so I won't be going into that in any great detail, but the charges have been laid and they are before the courts. Remembrance Day went really well in the county. We had a lot of members come out for that. We had members in Caledonia, Greenfield, Milton, and Liverpool. I'm trying to think if anybody else went. I believe that was it. But we attended those services, and they were great. Parade season, we've had participation in 2 parades, and I believe there's another, maybe not a parade coming up, but we've been receiving requests for red surge duties, which of course we will attend. That's the basics for today.
Thank you, Councilman Cloud.
Good morning, officially.
Good morning.
With your 3 officers that are on stress leave, mm-hmm. I understand the reason they're off. And I understand that it's apparently no additional cost to the municipality for their absence, or are we?
No, I don't believe it would be an additional cost. I believe that it's just its initial cost and
initial
the numbers
cost.
Are off. Yeah.
When the officers are not on the job, and where does the replacement come from? How is that position, those positions filled?
They're not. So they're not backfilled, but we have been covering all of the shifts. I won't let the levels drop below 2 members per shift. So we'll backfill with overtime, and Southwest Nova, our commanders in Southwest Nova are aware of the situation and fully supportive of me backfilling. So
there's no other officers that are available to you from other detachments?
They are on a shift-by-shift basis, but we're not taking anybody on a short-term, I can't think of the word, but we're not backfilling them for periods of time. If we have a shortage on the shift, then I'll backfill it with an overtime shift. We also have Constable Chris Boardman, who's a retired sergeant who's on the reserve program, and he's been working with us since April on a full-time basis. We did just get a new constable from Manitoba, so he's filled the shift, and as it stands right now, I don't have any gaps in the shift, so I'm able to cover without overtime.
So with overtime shift, though, there must be an increase in overtime pay. Does that come from our resources?
It comes from the initial budget.
Initial budget.
Yeah.
So when there's a fill-in by other officers,
mm-hmm.
I know there has to be a large amount of paperwork that, once you get a report, you have something mm-hmm. that you have to address. And then there's a lot of paperwork and that sort of thing. Does that go back on the officers that are on staff now?
Yes.
So that takes them out of the, out in the community, that keeps them more in the detachment. Is that causing a problem?
It isn't. What would happen normally if we had the same, if we had Liverpool members on shift, the paperwork would still exist. So it's not really changing that so much. We're not in, we're coming into the winter period where it slows down some. I was monitoring that to make sure that one member in particular or someone who was being covered by overtime wasn't bearing the brunt of additional files.
Mm-hmm.
But it really hasn't been an issue.
That was my concern about burdening the existing staff.
Yeah.
Because these officers have been off for a long time. I mean, some of them have
absolutely.
Been off very long. And
yes.
Is there any signs of them returning?
Well, I've been working with health services, and I mean, obviously, a lot of that information is personal, so
yes.
they don't really divulge a lot that way. But it's my understanding, I've been speaking with Staff Sergeant Whalen, who's running the health services office now.
Yeah.
And he says that I should have some updates on two of the members very shortly.
Okay.
And they've been meeting regularly with the health services officer. So hopefully we'll have better information for you on the next meeting. But I have been the squeaky wheel, hoping for some grease.
Okay. Good to have one in there.
Deputy Mayor Kelly?
Hi. I'd like to talk a little bit about cannabis, legalization
mm-hmm.
of cannabis. Have you come across anything so far in our community to deal with that new law?
No, not really. We haven't seen a huge spike in issues or anything like that. It's my understanding from just reading the news that they have a shortage anyways for sales. But no, we haven't. You know, there was an initial thought that we were going to have a spike and everybody was going to be walking down the street with a bong in their hand. And it's just, it hasn't been the case. There's been a couple of tickets issued for people smoking in vehicles and things like that, but we haven't had an increase in impaired activities, like impaired drivings. We haven't had any increase in really any of it. I think on the 17th, the first day, one guy thought he was keen, and while we were stuck in traffic, he smoked a joint on his lawn, and we're like, okay.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, there hasn't been any issues.
Right. Because, yeah, I guess it's for people to wrap their heads around and, you know, just how this law, and I try to liken it to alcohol. Like, you couldn't walk down the street drinking a beer, so therefore
well,
you can't walk down the street smoking.
Yeah, see, there's some confusion
cannabis.
About that, because it's my understanding that the cannabis laws are following the Smoke-Free Places Act and
yes.
not the Liquor Act,
right.
which, in my opinion, would have made more sense. I think, you know, personally, it should have followed the Liquor Act where, yeah, you can't walk down the street drinking
really.
A beer,
yeah.
so why would you be able to walk down the street smoking a joint?
That's
but,
right.
So we're still getting clarification. We're getting weekly messages from headquarters, just trying to iron out those details so that everybody's on the same page on enforcement for those things.
Right, yeah, because the same way you wouldn't be able to drink a beer while you're driving a vehicle, you can't smoke a
Yeah, well, you definitely
cannabis.
Can't smoke in a vehicle. There's no question about it.
Right.
But... as far as walking down the street, I don't think there's legislation to stop that because it doesn't follow the Liquor Act, it follows the Smoke-Free Places Act.
Right, but what act does it follow for smoking in a car then, while you're driving, operating a vehicle?
I'd have to look.
That's the Motor Vehicle Act?
I believe it's Motor Vehicle Act, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's interesting, yeah. So, we've obviously, as a region, put things in places like it follows the no smoking, so you can't smoke in any of our buildings,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, that doesn't mean that you can't, that you could smoke it in on our properties, our parks, and our recreation, you know, that
mm-hmm.
sort of thing, you know, on those grounds.
That's right.
That's possible then, right?
From my understanding,
no place
it is.
Okay, that's what I understand.
Yeah.
And so, can I ask one more question? I did want to understand, two more actually.
Yep.
The DREs, the drug recognition experts,
that's
we don't
right.
have any here.
We don't have any here, no. There are, four, I believe we have four in Lunenburg County, no, sorry, there's three in Lunenburg County, one in Bridgewater Police Service, and two, I think, in Shelburne. It's a pretty difficult course to get on,
yeah.
and it requires a member to be away for a good month.
Yeah.
I've talked with the commander of Southwest Nova about the possibility of getting a DRE here, but it's, with having drug recognition experts basically half hour in either direction, it's not really a priority to load
right.
that course right
and
now.
With our staffing situation,
yeah.
I can understand that as well. And the other question is, what can we expect or when, what is the status of the new Traffic Safety Act that's replacing the Motor Vehicle Act, right?
I'm not aware.
Traffic Safety Act, is it, not aware of the act or not aware of what's going on?
I'm not aware of any changes, no.
Are you aware of,
I was understanding there was a review, but I wasn't understanding there was a new act proposed.
No, oh, okay, so we treat traffic.
Pardon?
Has not been voted.
Yeah, it wouldn't have come down to us yet, then.
Right, okay, thank you. All right, that's it then. Thought I was having a, to mention.
Counselor Johnson?
I just had one question. It kind of tags into the workload that the cannabis thing did for you, but the new federal regulation on the mandatory breath sample for all stops, can you explain how that's going to be administered and what it's going to do to your workforce for extra workload?
Sorry, are we speaking about, like, for alcohol or for?
Yes, for alcohol.
It won't change our workload. I would say that even if they do put any sort of provisions in place for us to do a mandatory anytime, I think members will still wait to have some sort of indication of alcohol consumption before we would ever request a sample. It wouldn't make sense for us to do that. I don't see how it would make sense, and I think that we'll probably see a lot of court challenges, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that that's going to impact us at all.
All right.
Any other counselor have a question or comment? Counselor Fancy?
Yes. I like what you're doing. It's a lot of things, like you've got your force up there to 10 that's active, which is good, and being able to go through the health services just to try and help the others to be able to get back in. I think you're dealing everything into a positive light and trying to make sure there's two on shift. You know, there's been issues in the past, and I think you, I commend you for that. And Ron Duff Needy's been nothing but good, trying to work with doing the community policing. He's made himself available, so I really appreciate that. One thing that I'm just more questioning of is that our senior safety coordinator, with Carol Hipwell.
Yes.
What I understand is she works 3 days here, but I think she's working 2 days in Bridgewater.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, so she's working. So they, because I know at that meeting, it just kind of surprised me when they said that we've got 1.5 people working down there, because she's working down there 2 days a week. I was thinking that when everything was increased, we were going to get more days than three, I guess. That's mm-hmm. So I guess maybe something we have to really look at, because our need is still here, you know. Whether they need 1.5 people, or somebody full day at a time, and somebody half, we need somebody here that needs to be more than just 3 days a week. And I don't know what her thought is. Is that just because she isn't getting enough to be able, that she has to get out there, or?
I wouldn't say that that's the case. I would say that she understands fully that there would be enough work here. I'm not entirely sure how the funding works for her position, so
right.
I think that it's probably, if I was to venture a guess, it's probably a cost-sharing measure. But I can certainly make those inquiries and get back to you on it and see if that's something that's possible, that she could work down here more often.
I can share some light on that. There's only funding for 3 days a week.
Okay.
You know, I guess my question to you, to help us as counselors to increase the funding, because I know two of the counselors here sit on that committee, and we have a meeting this afternoon, is do you see a need for more of her activity to help you and your members out?
I would say that it's an incredibly valuable service. A lot of what she's doing falls, it's not so much a mental health issue, but it does fall under, you know, where we're having an aging population where there are issues of dementia, Alzheimer's and things like that, which falls more on her side of, her side of the mandate. She's able to deal with those and get appropriate resources in place. It would be, before I would, commit to anything, I would have to sit down with her and say, do you think that if you had 5 days a week that you would be able to do more? I know she's doing a ton of work in the 3 days that she's here, but myself personally, yeah, I think she's an incredible resource, and it would be nice to have her here more often.
It's always a catch-22, because we got to have the justification to
exactly.
go look for the funding, and the province only gives X number of dollars, and then it's knocking on doors trying to get the rest of it. So it isn't the fact that the value isn't there, Jack. It's the fact that there's no funding available. We're
yeah.
working at that. So.
But I do agree. I think that it would probably be certainly worthwhile to sit down with Carol. We can do up a report just showing her workload and seeing if that, she would be able to help more people if she was here. I mean, certainly we would anticipate that if she was here 5 days a week, she'd be able to help more often and help more people. But before I would be able to commit yes or no, I would want to sit down with her.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah.
Councilor Fancy, do you have a continuation?
Yes, again, I guess it's just the, not trying to put point fingers or anything, it's trying to look at what you can, because I guess we maybe didn't use our senior safety coordinators properly in the past, because they lived in the community. So anybody would call them up at 10 o'clock at night or you know, there was a problem and they would go out and take that on, though they weren't really being paid, they were going above and beyond,
mm-hmm.
and they were available 7 days a week. And so having someone not living in the community, it, you weren't going to get those phone calls as so much as, you know, as you would with somebody who is living here. So but that shouldn't be part of their mandate, but we need to, I guess maybe that's where to use that 211 or something, that we get some people get to know where to call to, because they had that safety feeling when they would talk to the senior safety coordinator, even if it was 11 o'clock at night, say, look, I got a problem, that they could be able to then do intervention to be able to get them to the right people.
Mm-hmm. And I understand what you're saying. I do know that Carol does make herself available outside of the regular hours. And how much time she's spending, you know, on the off hours doing
right.
those things, I'm not sure. But that's another thing that we could certainly include in the report.
Yeah, as long as we can look at it,
yeah.
just try to see how it looks going forward.
Absolutely, because it's one of those positions that I hadn't seen before in Nova Scotia, and it's an incredibly valuable position. So, yeah.
Councilor Fisk?
Just a quick question. Is any of your officers, are they trained for the roadside mini tester for drugs?
No, none of our members are currently trained on that. We don't have one.
You see the future of having one?
It's really coming down. I know the criminal operations branch has talked about possibly having more, but they're testing. They're working with the three that they have currently now in the province. How much they're being used, I'm not sure. I haven't seen anything on those numbers, but we won't have anybody trained on that for a while. A lot of it's a useful tool, but it's only going to just work towards your grounds to calling the drug recognition expert to do the actual testing. So
continue on that subject. Are you allowed to, if there's suspicion of drugs, can you bring them in for testing?
Yes.
Nope,
the drug recognition expert would come to us. Yeah, and the testing, I've seen it done in Lunenburg when I worked there. A lot of the times, it's a tricky thing because you're kind of always in between the, is this alcohol, is this drugs? Because there's an indication of impairment. So when you have the grounds, when you believe the person is impaired, then you can read the demand and perform those tests. You don't necessarily need that tester. Yeah, it's just an additional tool to formulate your grounds for impairment.
Councilor
McClellan. I'm still on the topic of the senior safety officer,
mm-hmm.
Carol. I'm on the committee as well as Councilor Johnson. And we used to, in the past, have representation from our CMP. When Rob James was with you, he's now retired,
mm-hmm.
he always attended the meetings and was our sort of liaison between your department and our
mm-hmm.
committee. I'd like to see that reinstated somehow.
Constable Ron Duffney is your man.
Okay.
Just let us know when the meetings are on Hill.
Okay. And another question or another comment, I guess, is I understand that a lot of the issues and a lot of the workload on our senior safety officer, Department of Social Services, and also with our doctors, is the lack of support for mental health services. And that is huge in our province, and they have not addressed it. And if we could all get together as a community and put the pressure on the provincial government to do something and have a strategy put forth on mental health, that would relieve a lot of the workload and a lot of these other programs that we have in our communities. And I don't know how that can be started, but I think we should really take a serious look at that from our municipal aspect of it and get the support we need here. And then lobby all the other municipalities that are in the same state that we are, because I really think that is an area that has not been focused on, and it is a contributor a lot to your cases, to the hospital cases, and to, of course, our senior safety person as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It So it, I wouldn't say it's the bulk of the workload, but it certainly is, it's a noticeable piece, yes, absolutely.
Councilor Fancy?
Just one other question. We had a trailer, a speed trailer, the one with the invisible speed sign.
Yeah.
That, I think it's owned by Little River Fleet, right, I think?
It is.
And we've only ever known we've had it up here once, because it's got to be connected and brought up and looked after. I'd like to be able to get have more access to, I guess, come bringing it up here or schedule time to bring it up, because it works very effectively. When people start to see that, they know where they are. They don't know if they're on radar or what's going on, but if we could be able to get it up. And I know the last time it was brought up, we were supposed to be in a couple areas where I wanted, and we never coordinated it properly.
Yeah.
Didn't get
there was an issue with transportation of the trailer.
Yes.
That we have sort of rectified. I'm hoping that we can get the trailer up here, because I agree with you, it's a valuable tool.
Yeah.
And once we have the vehicle that can tow it, that was kind of the issue. I know that sounds a bit like a cop-out, but a certain retired member ran over a porcupine and got hit by a deer, so we lost the vehicle that could tow it. But no, I'll be working to make sure that we can do that, because I agree with you, that's a great tool, and it does slow people down. So.
Okay, thank you.
Any other councillor have a question or comment or Constable John Harris? Well, thank you, Constable John Harris, for presenting today and answering the questions.
Very
appreciated.
Welcome.
And you're expecting to perhaps do it next month again at some point?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Under 4.0 on the agenda, we have tabling of petitions. We have no petitions to table today. Are there any petitions to be tabled today? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions. We have no petitions today. Brings us to 5.0, public question comment session. This is an opportunity for members of the gallery to make comments. Please state your name, your address, and limit your comments to 5 minutes or less.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Leon Robinson, Common Street, Liverpool. The NRCMP report there had just a quick question here. The two top positions, as we see there, are vacant. Now, is our contract being adjusted? There's nobody to fill those positions. The contract we have with the NRCMP?
They would backfill positions during the period of time that shifts are required. There would be no extra increase to our contract price.
They don't be pretty shy that they don't.
You're correct, because they would be back to it.
Okay. Under 9.1, you have the Residence Fire Department there, where you're proposing to loan $100,000 for the per building to house the additional equipment that they received from the other fire department in Charleston. Just wondering, the location there, was that adjacent to their present building or nearby? I'm just thinking for the convenience of the fire or something, and for the people to be able to coordinate that.
To my understanding, it's located on the back side road, the old Route 3, up past the existing service station.
So it wouldn't be real close to the fire department building now?
It's probably within 1,000 feet as you travel by street.
Thank you. And last, this is probably your last meeting before Christmas, so I'd just like to wish you and the mayor, your council, and staff a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
And thank you, Leon, and we wish you all the best on behalf of council and staff.
Thank you.
Any other member of the gallery? Yes.
John Cox, 121 Dog Road, this point, the White Point, sorry. Just a couple of items this morning. On 9.1, I think this is a great thing that we're going to be able to provide better infrastructure for our local fire department, and also to utilize the building that is becoming vacant. It certainly will be losing some assessment value, but the benefit to the community, I think, would be quite like that, and the council will pay fully on that request. Second item is in regard to 12.2, in regard to the upgrade of the internet for the Prince Place and Aero Center. My understanding of the background is correct. The item is in regard to the funding, it says it will be repaid over the 3-year period. We are already operating as a deficit. Where will payments for that come from? And also, I'm questioning the need for this. Perhaps I don't understand it that well, but we appear to only have about 3 major events a year within the facility. And we stretch that over the period of time that we seem to be getting upgrades in the infrastructure from the companies. Are we going to have a performance bond or something like this that will ensure that once we have this upgrade in place, that we're not going to be looking at this again in another 2 years? Just to a point after a while that we've got a large sum of money tied up in that facility, and if we keep adding to it, we'll never get to a point where we're going to be able to say this becoming even close to self-sufficient. Perhaps either in response to the question or in discussion of the item, some of these points might be checked. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. During the discussion on the motion, I think all of your questions will be answered in full. The short story is we have been struggling with the signal strength at Queen's Place for a number of years. World Junior Curling will require significant need of internet services there beyond what we would normally require, and it's partially addressing the requirement of World Junior Curling, but that discussion will, I expect, fully answer your questions, and I'll be later this morning. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak this morning?
Good day, Mr. Mayor, councilors. I'm here.
For the record, could you state your name and address, please?
Eric Golden, 1036 Brooklyn Shore Road, Beach Meadows. We probably live closer to the beach than anybody else. I'd like to speak about the beach for a little bit. Countless people walk that beach every day. I'm sure they're there for their own reasons, from mental health to just enjoying the beauty of the beach. We have a number of bylaws in place that protect the beach from littering, from dogs off leash, from dogs pooping on the beach. If you do that and you're caught, you'll be fine. When you take a fish farm and a salmon that's approximately 10 kilograms in weight, 20 pounds, and he poops in the water, nothing happens. That's fine. Take 400,000 fish and let them poop in a concentrated area, and we do nothing about it at all. One dog, one piece of poop, we have bylaws in place. 400,000 fish and no bylaws. Now the currents will draw some of that away and will pollute it, but it does not manage the waste. The currents change. We know that. The farm is subject to all of the forces of nature. We've seen waves as high as 10 feet breaking over the rock down there and so on. All of those factors will be greatly a very high risk on that side of things. And I think when you look at the amount of waste that's going in there, and if you looked at 400,000 dogs on that beach pooping every day, you would not put up with it. And now you're going to take, and you're going to double the size of that, so you're between 800,000 and 1 million fish. That's the equivalent of approximately 4,000 people that we know are wasting in the water every day. I think when you look at risk management, and we all have to, there is no other conclusion than that fish farm has to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak today?
Anna Moss, 1980 House Road, Beach Meadows. Mayor and Council, I want to start off thanking one Councilor Susan. I'm glad he's my district.
prosperous new year. And to tell you that I'm going to talk about gifts. I see council and mayor as a gift to the region. I hope that you also see your constituents as gifts. Sometimes pain to the bottom, I'm sure. And that goes both ways. However, the thing is that when we work toward the health of this area, its prosperity, then we all benefit. I thank you for the education you bring to me and the work you do. And again, as we approach the season of gift giving, as a mother, I look at the gifts that I'm going to leave my kids, the future generation, people I don't know. And I'm sure you do too. And part of this, of course, and what with my kids is the parenting I give them, because I want to set them up for success in this life. I'm not going to be here the whole time. And none of us are. And part of this gift-giving that we leave, the legacy, is also in what we give them to work with in this world, our environment, a clean and healthy world, to sustain them. So again, what Eric just expressed is paramount in my mind as I look at this area, what I'm grateful for in Beech Meadows and Eagle Head, and what I'm threatened by and what threatens it. And that is open net fin fish farms. Cook is on the agenda right now with what they want. But Marine Harvest has taken over, and Northern Harvest, they're in Newfoundland, Grieg, all these Norwegian companies. Don't think that it's going to be just Cook. This is going to be building. The news is building. Everything. Cook just won the private growth award, private business growth award, given by Grant Gordon. So see, these are the important things to look at. The dollars that they're raking in, but the lack of responsibility for environment, the lack of protecting the gift, the legacy. Bernadette Jordan, MP, just announced yesterday a substantial amount of money for tourism for the South Shore. Good news, $64,000 to grow off-season tourism. You know, there's opportunity. There's a gift to expand our gift of this natural area that we have. That I guess I say let's capitalize on the potential of good, healthy, eco-friendly industry. Say no to Cook expansion and examine carefully what they're doing. Even if expansion, which is goes off the table, which is wonderful, let's look at what they're doing presently out there. Are we willing to risk our beautiful beaches, our citizen health, our lobster, the risks. Government says they can't risk losing the money. And the people are crying all over the world, we can't risk this to our environment and our health with antibiotic resistance. And
fish to affect native stocks. The eyesore of what was once pristine views of our ocean coast for residents and tourists and newcomers like myself since 2004 or permanently recently. Not to mention the risk to lobsters and so on and on and on. The public record of pollution of debris and knowingly using banned substances and the lack of transparency is extremely concerning. Is this the neighbor we want? I'm nervous. I'm afraid what the future holds. I'm excited about this neighborhood, our new neighbors, friends that I may make here in the future. I'm nervous about what's coming. I think that tourism needs to grow. I think that we need to, we were a part of the Blue Sky planning session with the consultancy firm. And I'm hopeful that the population will improve, that we will get more tax dollars. But if people get wind, and they will, that the view from here is fish farm upon fish farm upon fish farm, you'll have tumbleweeds going down Main Street, and it'll drop down. Houses won't sell as well. That's my prediction. I think it's inevitable. I think if that's what happens to this beautiful, glorious province and this beautiful area, I will be so disheartened. I just need you to know this. It's personal for me. It's political for you, and it's also political for all of us. Thank you. Merry Christmas. I appreciate your listening.
And Charlotte, if I may, I have some information I can share with you. I do not have an expiry date of the existing license where there's 14 pens off Coffins Island. At this point, Kelly Cove Salmon is in the scoping process, and to my understanding, there is no application for an expansion at this point, although prior to the end of the six-month process, if they do wish to apply for a license or expansion, they would need to do that prior to the end of the six-month process, which would be March. We were informed at the council by Cook Aquaculture representatives when they did the presentation that they have 10 employees associated with the farm off Coffins Island. So I expect that also includes those that automatically control the feed of the Bridgewater. But I don't have a breakdown on Queen's employees. I am informed that there are some here. The numbers I don't have. So that is what I can share with you that I am aware of. And certainly we wish all in the public gallery Merry Christmas at this time as well. And thank you for your wishes to us. Are there any other members of the gallery that would like to speak today?
Hello, I'm Annabelle Singleton, 105 Midway River Road, Mill Village. My presentation will take just about 5 minutes, maybe 5 and a half if I don't speak quickly enough.
I'm sorry.
Dear Mayor and Council, thank you for allowing me this time to express my concerns regarding the potential expansion of Cook Aquaculture in the Ripple Bay. I am a local business owner and environmental analyst. Along with owning the pork grocer, I have worked for the past 18 years as an environmental analyst preparing environmental assessments for mainly marine infrastructure projects. While I do not claim to be an expert on aquaculture industry, and I've never worked on a fish farming project, I do have extensive knowledge of the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act, the Fisheries Act, the Navigation Protection Act, to name a few. A brief story to set the stage. In 2007, the American company Philcon proposed the White Point Quarry and Marine Terminal in Digby, Nova Scotia. Philcon's intention was to blast, excavate, and ship granite rock by barge from Digby to Maine for concrete production in the U.S. The proposed project was reviewed under Canada's most stringent environmental assessment process, a comprehensive panel review. Throughout the process, local community members and environmental groups cried no. The project's negative impacts are too great. In the end, the project was determined to pose unacceptable risks to the environment and the community, and the project was rejected. The only project that I am aware of in Nova Scotia rejected on environmental grounds, a victory in the community's eyes. Since then, Philcon has successfully sued the Government of Canada and Nova Scotia, seeking more than $500 million in damages on grounds of lost revenue under Chapter 11 of NAFTA. Now, a quick internet review of independent reports from around the world will identify a long list of renowned scientists and community members standing up and speaking out against the destructive nature of the open pen fish farming industry and the multinational corporations, including Cook Aquaculture, who run them. In 2012, the Harper government further gutted Canada's environmental protection regulations. The Canadian Environmental Assessment Act is no longer automatically required to review projects likely to impact fish habitat and marine navigation, leaving little opportunity to control industrial development, such as open pen fish farming, based on local socioeconomic and environmental concerns. Since 2015, fish farming in Nova Scotia is regulated only provincially, but not federally, under the revised Fisheries and Coastal Resources Act by the Department of Fisheries and Aquaculture. Upon reviewing the new 2015 panel review process for new marine aquaculture sites, I do have some concerns. For instance, how were the three independent panelists, a lawyer, an engineer, and a business person, chosen as the current Nova Scotia Aquaculture Review Board? And where is the scientist on this panel? Who is looking out for the community from a socioeconomic and an environmental perspective when no environmental assessment is required? If chosen by the Department of Fisheries and Aquaculture, who appear to be pro-industry, is it fair to assume that they chose panelists most likely to meet their desired pro-industry outcomes? Concerned citizens and groups can formally be part of the review panel process as an intervener. This status would give the intervener access to the scoping reports prepared by Cook Aquaculture and by the department for review and argument. But first, community members must prove to the panel that the project is likely to have direct and substantial impact on them. What in the eyes of the panel constitutes direct and substantial effects? Is it the lobster fisherman whose boat can no longer sail where the new aquaculture site is located? Or the nearest neighbor who may have to suffer the stench of dead fish or pens that break free in the next hurricane as it moves up the coast, as community members of Jordan Bay now do? While on the surface, the panel review hearings will provide an opportunity for community input, what bearing will our concerns have on the panel's ultimate decision? As we stand today expressing our concerns related to potential negative impacts on our traditional fisheries, the health and welfare of our coastal communities, increased impact on our native wild salmon stocks, loss of economic growth from a tourism industry that is thriving here in Queens County, outrage over proposed expansion of a multinational industry that is just fundamentally wrong. How will our concerns be weighed within this process? How many people will need to stand in front of that panel or write a letter or sign a petition to say no to make our voices count? So I am here today to ask that council carefully consider our concerns and to make this and to not make this process as easy as it already is for industry to take over our coastlines. Please stand with your concerned community members and as a council say no to this potential project. I believe you do not need to wait for the proposed new science to know that open pen fish farming is having severe negative effects on communities around the world, and that we, Liverpool, is next on the list to be, in the long run, devastated by this industry should it be allowed to continue to expand. Thank you, and Merry Christmas to all.
Thank you, Annabelle. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak today?
Yes, I would. And I started off with the applause, so you probably figure that what my chat might get to you folks maybe about. And certainly, thank you for allowing myself and us be able to voice our concerns.
And if I could ask you, could you state your name and your address for the record, please?
I sure can. Stan Munsell,
I live at 980 Brooklyn Shore Road. It's a place that's very near and dear to me. My forefathers actually fished from the base of the property. They're all pensmen. They fished from the base of the property, which I now occupy, and the house next door is a business for us. We operate it as an Airbnb or a vacation home rental. So I very much am interested on a number of fronts with regards to what's happening at literally an arm's throw or a stone's throw from me. I can, when the Cook employees are working at this site, I can actually hear them talk. I can hear the automatic feeder when it cuts in and cuts out. I can smell odors that don't seem quite right that I haven't necessarily smelled before. A few years back, I referred to this operation, as did most people, as a farm. But I have an agricultural science degree. How silly of that of me to even back in the day when the fishermen, I call them fishermen, but they go in the boats or cook employees and actually feed the product that was in the pens. That certainly isn't the case today. As I evolved and my thoughts evolved, truly, you know, I'm thinking, no, this is a feedlot. And they put the fish in. And a year and a half later, they pull it out and they throw whatever it is at them to size them up as quickly as they possibly can. Today, I think I refer to it as an enterprise or a factory. It's a big machine. This is a multinational truck with arms that reach out across the world. So I did jot down a few points before coming, just to share with you how this has personally impacted, and potentially financially is impacting me. So yeah, this is near and dear, and it is something that I'm very passionate about. First time that I've actually donned the doors here, I kind of suspect it won't be my last. Okay, so this is what I know, and some of the negative impacts that, like I mentioned, that I experienced. This company, it's huge. It's a multinational driven by profit. It is a pollution generator, and I think Eric and we've spoken quite passionately about here we are. You know, we've cleaned up our bay. We no longer have major polluters. Human waste are pretty much eliminated from our bay, and here we are about, the existing farm is a polluter, certainly from a feces perspective and from other perspectives, but we potentially could be facing a double or a tripling, and this is just the beginning. So, but potentially two more locations, and who knows, 5-10 years down the road, maybe two or three more locations. Great concern of mine. Interesting. Really, do I see, and you've mentioned 10 employees, David. Really, do I see any employees these days out there? I know it's remotely operated, the automatic feeder, I understand there's cameras, all this remotely operated by someone that whose offices aren't even located in our county. Okay, so the existing site occupies a large area near my home and business. Potentially it's going to be 40 hectares in size. This is huge. So when I think of looking down from the air at this, the area is not going to be that much smaller than the area of Coffin Island. It's huge, intrusive, very irritating. So the noise, the odor, I mentioned, again, walking, I walk the dog every day, beach on the beach. I know, I'm not seeing the feces, but I know it's there, irritating, washing up on my shirt. 2 years ago, I had to get in touch with Buck because a part of their operation out there washed ashore on my property. Going to happen again, we potentially can have Cat 2 hurricanes that can come up our bay. Can these farms, these operations, sustain the force of a Cat 2 hurricane? Again, I'm concerned. Myself and guests, we kayak to Coffin Island, we kayak up to the bay, up to Liverpool. No one enjoys having to navigate in and around these operations. Our guests of the Muddy Atlantic. In the last six months, it's been booked 100 nights. We have guests from Europe, from all over the U.S., all over Canada. The Mighty Atlantic, do they really want to witness this thing that you can actually, when people are on it, you can actually hear them speak? That's how close this thing is to our business? No. I think, just looking ahead, it's got to have a negative impact upon my property value, and I'll be appealing. And I'm going to encourage lots of other folks to appeal their assessment, property assessments. I think that's a no-brainer. Those are my 10 items. So I thank you for indulging me, and I am really quite passionate, and if you were living where I live, I think you'd be quite passionate as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Stan, for your comments. Any other member of the gallery have any comments today?
Hi, Brian Muldoon, 980 Brooklyn Shore Road. I'm here to protect Liverpool Bay. It's an important part for us, and I'm not going to go over all the points that everyone else in the community has mentioned. I guess my frustration is, when I started this rally, I'm here to rally everyone together to educate them, because I didn't know what was going on under those nets until I started reading, until I started understanding what's happening. And when I brought it to a couple of council members, it was like, well, no, we don't make a decision. Well, the province makes a decision. We need your council to be behind the citizens here. And there isn't one person that's walked up to me in the last couple of months and said, oh, I want the fish farm. Yeah, let's keep it, It does good for the community. They all have major concerns with it. So we need you as a council to get behind us. And it can't be in 6 months. We need your voice today. And we can't hear, well, it's the province. Well, why is the province spending so much time with the council, taking them to Norway? Why is Cook, if you have no reason here, the council has no decision, why is Cook standing here and presenting to you their plan? You should just present it to the provincial government. So I'm pleading with you, get behind the constituents here in Queens County. We're not stopping, but we need your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Any member of the gallery today would like to speak? Yes.
Brian Moore, 163 Eagle Head Wharf Road. Been around the bay for the past 30 years. And when Cooks first started, remember the tractor trailer coming with all their plastic. And they started assembling all their cages on the beach. Plastic shavings were just unbelievable. From cutting their pipe and gluing it together, grows the mess. And over the years, the storms that we've had, debris washes up in front of our house and right by the wharf. And I call Cooks, nobody would come. They could care less. And it's something to sit there. So I ended up picking up these pieces of the white styrofoam, at this rally, I guess, and then cutting it up. Getting rid of it, taking off the landfill site. But it's been a mess. Every time we have a storm, this stuff will wash up right in front of our place. We're right by the wharf. And I see it all. And like I said, during the assembly, we have a lot of people that walk that beach in Eagle Head. And it was a mess when they were building these cages. They built all seven at once, and they just took their boat and loaded them out there and dropped them in place. But after it was all done, it was still a mess on our beach. And they had all their plastic pipes.
I don't know how it went from 410 to 14 without any kind of application for expansion. But for some reason, when Cook took it over, it grew in size. So we already have a larger fish farm than we should have there without any accountability or input from the community or from the Department of Fisheries. I don't know how it grew in that, to that size. So now we have a problem of pollution of, from a tourism point of view, from a land value, property value point of view, and from, like, you know, the, like we've already said, for the future and for the health of the people that live there and will live there in the future. It's really disgusting if we let the industry come in and just walk all over us and not pay taxes and not be accountable and not have healthy work practices, and nobody seems to be checking. It's like, you know, it's like the animals or the, nobody's watching them, nobody's taking into account what they're doing, nobody's saying, you've expanded, we want you alive, you've used this kind of chemical, we want it alive. There doesn't seem to be any of that, and we need to get on board, we need to get ahead of them, because they're already marching forward.
Thank you, Maureen. Any other members of the gallery today? Well, I want to thank everyone for your comments today. Council has heard your comments, and certainly that's very appreciated. We're going to move on now to the next item, which is 6.0, approval of minutes. Under 6.1, regular council minutes of November 27th, 2018. Are there any errors or omissions in those minutes? Hearing none, a motion to approve those minutes would be in order. Moved by Deputy Mayor Kelly, seconded by Councilor Muse. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you.
Your Worship, may I just interrupt just for a second before our fine people leave? I just wanted to say thank you very much, and I really appreciate your passion for the area and your passion for the project. Mm. I appreciate that.
So stand up and be counted.
Yeah. Get behind us.